Great.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Greg. That was awesome.
Good to see you.
Okay, folks, so let's get on to the Q&A. At this point in time, let's see, you can ask any question of either Peter Real, our CTO, Steve Petkovich, who runs our power business now, Kevin Carlin on factory automation, Mark Gill on automotive, and you just heard from Greg Henderson as well. So anybody have questions? All right, we have a question. So how's this working, by the way? So these guys are mic'd up wirelessly, and that's working, and then I walk this around. Is that how it works? And you've got that side of the room, and I have this side of the room. Okay, just so we know what's going on. Tori, how does this work? You want to grab this?
Yeah, right. Thank you. Do we keep it to one question and one follow-up, or just?
Yeah, you must be on our earnings calls, Tori.
That's right.
Yeah.
My first question is for Greg. Greg, you talked about the software-defined radios. I was just hoping you could elaborate a little bit on how that stacks up versus competition, especially thinking about architectures like full-spectrum capture from some other suppliers out there. If you could just elaborate on that, that'd be great. Thanks.
So I would say that, you know, we don't talk about our competition specifically, but what I can tell you is that we believe we have the right architectures for all of the ecosystem. Macrocell, Massive MIMO, and multiband. And we are participating in all of those deployments. We're designed in across the ecosystem. So we have the right architecture and partitioning, and we are gaining share in this market.
Did you want to? All right. Will?
Is it on? Yeah. Hi. Questions for Steve. Thanks for sort of introducing us to Linear as part of ADI. You talked about this concept of someone's going to get that slot, so why not us? Can you talk about how that idea developed over time at Linear and how that's going to perhaps influence the approach at ADI and whether you see, how you see these cultures merging? Because you characterize the culture of Linear as pretty special and maybe a little bit different from analog.
The idea of someone's going to get that socket, why not us? That's just how Bob Swanson and Bob Dobkin took a look at business in general, a very aggressive mindset, and let's go out there and win. That created a culture of winning in Linear technology where I didn't play high school sports, but I like to win. And that kind of idea carried us through. I find that as part of analog devices, everyone at analog also likes to win. So in that sense, the cultures are just in lockstep.
Thanks. I think we had Ross had his hand up. Well, let's see. I got you, Charles. We'll get you next.
Thanks, Elliot. Ross Seymour from Deutsche Bank. Question for Mark Gill on the automotive side of things. We've heard a number of companies talk about this being an exciting market, and I have no doubt it will be. One unique part about ADI and Linear together is the margin-centric focus of the company as well. So when you talk about going from, I think it was $250 per vehicle to $600 per vehicle, can you talk about how the margin structure changes as you get up into those higher dollar content areas?
Well, I think I prefaced one of the paragraphs in there to talk about the highest value sockets when we're looking at radar and LiDAR. And there's clearly a complete spectrum of applications out there. And I think what we're looking to do is make sure we can extract the value that's commensurate for the technology that we're putting into this. So I think what you'll see is us moving towards those higher value sockets, bringing in the BMS tech capabilities from LT and looking at our own radar and LiDAR capabilities there as well.
Charles. Yeah.
Thanks. Just two quick questions, one for Steve. In one of your slides, you had this automotive radar solution, and you were talking about how you could have an integrated power management module with ADI. Could you just maybe talk in general about the timing of when these things can happen? Are we talking about 2 to 3 years, or is this really low-hanging fruit that, in the next several quarters we can start seeing some of these integrated modules? And then maybe for Mark, I think Deutsche Bank recently had this forecast on auto SAARs just in the U.S. talking about down 2 to 3% this year, maybe 5 to 10% through 2021. and you don't have to talk about the forecast, but just in an environment where tier one OEMs have, you know, unit pressures and profitability pressures, can you just talk about your automotive business and how you think that might play out?
Okay, I'll take the first question. With regards to integrated power products, we closed in March, and that's when the engineering teams got busy and got working together closely. So new products that are completely new, clean sheet products, they do take a couple years to get into production. Now, that said, we also have an existing very broad portfolio, as I mentioned in my presentation, and we have this micro module capability and manufacturing technology that's well in hand. And there are also opportunities leveraging existing silicon to make micro module products, which can, they don't always, but they can come out more quickly than fully new silicon. And so we're exploring whether there's opportunities to take some of the existing silicon and put those in micro modules to get there a little quicker. So, you know, we're going to do both.
So on the topic of SAR, I'd say when we started this year, there were a variety of folks who were looking at reductions in China, for example. And I didn't really believe that. So I spent some time in China, talked to the car manufacturers, talked to the tier ones there, and they didn't believe it either. And I think we've seen a fairly strong start to the year in China. So I think it's a difficult thing to honestly predict SAR, and with the autonomous vehicles coming out, I think there's lots of very wide predictions as well, what the impact of that may be. For me, I think I tried to touch on here in the conversation, SAR is one portion of the equation, but the content per vehicle is really important. And if I take the conversation on radar that we discussed here, for example, content is encapsulated in two different ways. One of them is the number of radars per vehicle. It's not just one, right? People talk about one, five, up to 20. It just depends upon what you want to try to do with those radars in the vehicle. So that's one element of content. The other then is, what is our content within that application, within that socket? We're moving from situations where we had a simple A to D converter or a simple RF device to a complete antenna-to-bit solution that contains a whole lot more value. So, I really think the catalyst for us is content growth. There's a SAR component, absolutely, but again, we'll see that when the days actually arrive. But content growth is really what's most important for us at this point.
Yeah, thanks. It's John Pitzer with Credit Suisse. I have a sort of a broad question for anybody who spoke this morning, but what's been unique about analog historically is that scale size hasn't necessarily translated into dominant market share, which is very different than the digital side of the world, where scale and size tends to move to dominant market share positions. Whether it was Greg's presentation or Mark's presentation, there clearly seems to be some trends afoot that are leading to more system-level development and potentially faster market share aggregation. You know, Vince, in your presentation, you talked about being number one or number two in all the markets you play in. I'm wondering if you could actually quantify what market share you have in those markets and how you think about terminal market share over time. The largest analog player only has about 19-20% market share. You're hovering right around 10. With all these trends, how does each of you think about where your terminal market share should be 3 to 5 years from now?
Well, I think there are many, many places you can play in the plethora of applications in which we participate. I think our business, where our business differs from the bulk scale of the digital area, for example, is that, as Peter talked about, the analog business is characterized by diversity. There are literally thousands of applications in which you play. And the broad base of products that we build can address all those different applications. You know, where do we focus our R&D on application-specific things? Well, where we know we can deliver great value for money, you know, where we can capture that value in good margin and free cash flow. So I would say the more application-specific type things we're doing are automotive. I think virtually everything we do in automotive is an application-specific type thing. I would say in the industrial area, more than 80% of what we do in terms of the many, many thousands of products out there, a lot more than 80% are very generic, open market type products. So there's a spectrum of kind of integration activities. And I would say the communications market is becoming really a case of it's bimodal. One part of it is highly integrated, more ASSP, and a lot of it is, you know, I would say very generic open market type products. But there's also a ping pong effect where you get the system level product designed in, you get an you get an opportunity to bring the kind of more standard product things with you. So that's the nature of our business. Where is terminal market share or market penetration? I think the analog business is going to become more and more diverse with more and more applications, more and more products. I think what we would consider to be dominant market share in an application would be 35% plus. I think that's how we view it.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Chris Casso from Raymond James. It's a question about linear. Vince yeah. or Steve, I guess either of you can answer it. But one of the things that was always pounded into our head by linear management was how difficult it was for what they did and how few people there were available that were able to do it. I guess first question is that still the case? And assuming that it is, with some of the new markets that you look to address with linear, how do you do that with the existing team? And how do you find the bandwidth to both defend the markets that you're already strong in addition to kind of going after some of these new markets that you're in, that you're looking to get into?
Well, I think the it's a good question, Chris. The beauty of the combination of the three franchises, ADI on signal path, Hittite on the microwave RF side of things, and now LTC largely around power. When you look at first of all, our business, the business of analog is a business of craft. It's a business where you hire people, typically speaking, early in their careers, and you bring them along. And a lot of people spend their entire careers at companies like ADI and LTC. So I think the combination of those three franchises gives us our unfair share of the talent and the ability to attract more talent. Peter talked about from a competitive moat standpoint, you know, we have 50,000 plus product SKUs in the company. We're putting out many hundreds of new products a year. So I think part of what we do is we build on the legacy. We're getting deeper and deeper into our customers. As I talked about earlier on, our customers are experiencing, as they put more and more of their effort into software and systems, there's more of a vacuum, which we are now, I think, uniquely positioned as a combined company of these three great franchises to not only protect the legacy and the franchise of what we've built, but to attack in a more complete way these new opportunities across the spectrum of frequencies, the different types of converters, the different types of power. And so I think at this point in time, as the industry diversifies, we have both the scale and the scope now in the company to be able to attack more and more of the opportunities.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Hi. Another culture strategy question, and maybe the similarities and differences across the other segments, kind of comparing power where linear was the bigger player, maybe with some of the other segments where ADI was the bigger player pre the merger, and how the maybe culture and strategy would be the same or different across segments.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that, let me step back a second. So roughly one third of linear, I would say, overlapped quite directly with ADI, at least on paper. So a lot of the linear and converter activities. But the truth was, linear did a superb job at figuring out where we were playing and trying to avoid us as much as possible. So on paper, the things look the same. But when you look at the portfolios, LTC did masterfully well, I think, in rifle-shotting, new products into the cracks in the portfolio that maybe ADI and others had. So there's a tremendous amount of uniqueness. We are folding the design teams are already working. They've already been working now for several months together, trying to figure out how to build a new roadmap of converters, you know, for big customers and small customers. And, you know, I think on the power side, LT was very, very dominant. You know, ADI, roughly $100 million worth of power revenue, LT roughly $1 billion. And so, again, there's a lot. We took, the ADI folks took the opposite direction with LTC. The ADI power people looked for sockets where LTC probably wasn't playing as dominantly as it might have been. So, you know, we've got our engineering teams working together, new roadmaps. We're converging, you know, where there might be a little overlap. We are making sure that we're doing things that are unique, that all the talent is deployed in this new company. And, you know, on the customer side of things, the very same. We're preserving all the LT sales and applications people on the ground, going more direct. So I think when you look at the technology story and the customer story, we are leveraging the diversity and the complementarity of both companies and creating something, as I said earlier, greater than the sum of the parts here. And, you know, culturally, everybody focuses in on culture, but I think what's very important to remember is that the reason that we can make this work and the reason we made Hittite work inside ADI was that our business values are essentially the same. We're innovation-focused. You know, we care passionately about doing impactful things that add value to our customers for which we get well paid. And that is true whether it's an ADI engineer, an LTC engineer, or a Hittite engineer. So I think those core values, once you've established those, it's very hard to change those because they're part of your DNA. But those values are deeply embedded in all three companies. And I welcome, by the way, when you talk about the routines and the processes for how you do things in both companies, yeah, they're different somewhat. But at the end of the day, we have to get products to market. You know, we have to get to customers. We have to manage our employees in a fair and competitive way. We're being very patient and careful at making sure that we take the best of the LTC routines, the best of the ADI routines, as we did with Hittite, and combine those in a meaningful way. And, you know, it is working very, very well today.
All right, thanks. Next question here.
Perfect. Thanks. Amit Daryanani, RBC. I guess, Steve, you talked about a $1 billion power portfolio today. Can you just touch on how big do you think this TAM is, and if you were willing to sacrifice somewhat on pricing today versus what Linear did, how big could this opportunity be for you guys? And I'm just wondering, you know, if you focus more on perhaps 40% free cash flow margins versus 80% gross, is there a large attractive revenue opportunity for you guys to go after?
Well, yeah, let me take a piece of that. So there's a portion of that that I'll cover in my presentation, and I'll help you size up the opportunity. But then in terms of how you think about the strategy, I'll leave that up to you. So wait on the first one. I'll fill you in and then go ahead.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, we are focused on operating margin and free cash flow. You may have been aware of some hard stops in the Linear way to look at gross margin and you know, selling price and things like this. And we've got now as part of ADI, I'd say, some amount of additional flexibility in how we attack business. And so we will be taking close looks at business as it comes our way and making the intelligent, rational decision whether we take it or not. So I anticipate that we'll have additional opportunities for revenue without stealing from Ali's thunder later. You know,
well, I only give the math.
We care about long-term profitable growth. And, you know, we will manage the opportunities very smartly within the bounds of our business model across the entire portfolio. And as Steve said, I mean, there's two sides to margin. One is price and the other is cost. We believe if that we're generating products with inherently high value, we get well paid. And with the additional, just the scale of ADI's manufacturing operation and the ability to, if you like, leverage cost of goods more aggressively, we have more flexibility as a company to go after share.
Perfect. And I guess, Mark, if you could maybe just talk about, on the automotive side, what is the geographic breakdown for revenues and where do you see the more attractive opportunities? Because I think Linear tend used to be at least more China heavy. So what does an aggregate company look like and where are the opportunities from your perspective?
To be quite honest with you, I haven't done the detailed math, but you're correct in that ADI was previously more Europe than Asia, and the Linear technology brought more Asia than Europe. If you ask me today where that would look, I'd say it's fairly well balanced at this point in time around the maybe three major global territories. It's a fairly diverse portfolio, quite honestly, at this point in time, really isn't really quite distributed around the world.
So, Harsh Kumar, Stevens. So ADI is an exciting and interesting company now. You've got things like RF, things like power management, different kind of combinations you typically don't see under one roof. I'm curious, in the automotive market, who would you consider as the closest competitor? And then part two of that question is, let's say you want a socket in radar or LiDAR, does that make it incrementally easier for you to walk in behind with power management sale or close some other part?
I think increasingly our customers, and we've touched on a couple of items here, they're often moving their engineering to different parts of their organization, addressing different types of challenges. It leaves some vacancies with their engineering teams. And if they do that, it creates an opportunity for ADI to have more of a solution sale. So whether we are leading with our power management and following with our radar solution, or leading with a radar solution and following that with a power management solution, together at this point in time, we can go with that complete package. And you know, the value that Steve touched on here is you need really good precision power management to get the very best out of the RF capabilities that we have. That's one of the wonderful 1+1=2 elements to this. We can really optimize both sides of that equation. So I think it presents us with a much stronger position to say to our customers, these things work perfectly together. You don't have to worry about some of the things. Now, they can go and think about some other parts of the equation. So whether that's in radar, whether that's in LiDAR, quite honestly, in our audio business, there's a lot of power technology we can bring into that as well. And clearly, we talked here about BMS and the great portfolio that ADI has that complements the great portfolio that LT has. So I think there's many situations where our sales team now is going to be really empowered bringing two bags with them. It's a much stronger sale for them. I think if you look at us on a scale of revenue in the automotive business, you know there's some very big players out there. I think what Vince identified in the charts here is we look to be top suppliers in particular marketplaces that we choose to be in. So it's not about just going after everything and being the biggest in total dollar value. It's picking those really key places for us to go after. And I think if you look at the types of differentiation that I tried to identify today, this real-world analog signal processing, this connection from the analog world to the digital world, the physical world, that's really where we own that space. And I think that does us great things across the broad portfolio of technologies that we offer.
All right, we have Blaine here.
Thanks. I think Peter might have made this comment, but he said 80% of parts could use only a few 12-inch wafers. I was just kind of curious, as you look at these new areas of growth, maybe autos, but even maybe some of the infrastructure, automation, maybe higher volumes, just your perspective on 12-inch, as well as just internal, external views. I think Linear was internal and probably some of the smallest lots in the industry. Just kind of curious, as you look at these new growth opportunities, how that changes.
Well, I think we've got I think the power in what we have in our manufacturing strategy is this balance between the internal and external. I think we've become a lot more sophisticated over the years in terms of what we position where in terms of use of technologies. And clearly, if there's a very high volume opportunity, we've an appropriate strategy to get the right cost position on that base. So we can swing. We have a strategy where we can either swing or position where our technology goes. So whether it's high volume opportunities or low volume opportunities, I feel very comfortable that we can position an appropriate manufacturing strategy. Now, irrespective of which one we pick, we have a maniacal focus internally on continually reducing cost. So that layers on no matter which way we go with this. So I feel quite comfortable with those statistics where we can position our different technologies. And it is true, the statistic I gave was sort of a scaled up statistic. If you take all the units, all the types of products we run, and you scale them up to the equivalent of a 12-inch wafer lot, which is 25 wafers, well in excess of 80% of those units would only use one lot or two lots a year, which creates a whole other series of headaches in your manufacturing strategy for you in terms of managing reserves and deliveries and the associated metrics that go with that. So I think we've it balanced really well. Now, we continuously look at it, but we've it balanced pretty well.
I think also, I mean, we also are market leading on low geometry for high performance analog mixed signal. In the comm space, we're on 28 nanometer for the software-defined radio platform I showed. We've announced our automotive radar platform on 28 nanometers. So we market lead on the geometries for high performance. Again, that's not where the digital is at, but where we are. So we do both. We have these kind of more internal, lower volume capabilities, but we also market lead on the low geometry, high volume, high performance when we need it, and that's the balance of the strategy.
And I'll talk about the fab strategy at Linear. It's true, Linear was mostly captive fab, but that's changing quickly.
All right, we'll just grab it here because I think you asked one before. So
thanks, Ambrish from.
Try to be fair here.
Ambrish from BMO. Sorry, buddy. Will. Question for you, Peter. From a CTO view, if you could help us understand. Your product portfolio has expanded tremendously, as has the process technology portfolio as well. Give us a little more insight into how, and maybe Vince, you can chime in as well, how are you prioritizing projects that are being worked on, and obviously they're in conjunction with the business leaders, but have the metrics changed at all with Linear now, a much different product portfolio? And then what are the ways that you're integrating the similar organization from Linear into the overall ADI technology fold? Thank you.
Well, there's a number of questions there, Ambrish. In terms of, let's say, we're spending $1 billion in R&D now combined. So what do we care about? We play in applications where we believe we get a good match between our technologies and the applications in which we play to drive profit and free cash flow ultimately over multiple years per product typically. We pay a lot of attention to the effect of new product revenue in the overall stream of ADI and its ability to generate growth, and that is probably more true on the ADI side than it was LT. So we're fusing our product development efforts and we're paying rapt attention to what it is we're going to do together to leverage the entire talent base that we've got across both companies and really focus intensely on that new product return metric. And I think I showed in one of my charts, with the pivot we made to the B2B market several years ago, we're really beginning to see the benefit now of the return that we're getting on the new product side, particularly in that B2B area. And in the high quality areas also of consumer. So I think it's a question of, for us, it's a question of being very, very clear on the markets in which we play, the applications that give us the kind of the attractive returns that we want, and getting to market as fast as we can. So we pay attention to time, the quality of the opportunity, time, and the effect on new product revenue ultimately. What was the other part of the question, Ambrish? I've forgotten
Let me just take a second part of it. There is no, and people laugh at this internally, there is no shortage in ways we look at our business internally in ADI. We cut our data by product category, by end market. We look at individual technology portfolios. We look at customer position. And actually, the power of bringing LT in here is it even puts more pressure on us to cut it by big customer and small customer and look at supporting that constant diversity. So it is, we are a quite a complex organization internally, and hopefully we try and simplify that when we face our customers. But all this balancing goes on dynamically internally. It is an overhead, but I think it's an overhead we manage very effectively. Looking at pillar technology positions, looking at solution positions by focused market segments, looking at the priorities of big customers versus small customers and getting that balance right. All those dynamics we manage internally. So there is no one North Star that we use internally. The North Stars are, the priorities are engineering excellence, you know, impactful innovation, and really making an impact in every customer engagement we engage in. And within that, all the balances and the levers we pull internally are quite complicated and don't lend themselves to one algorithm to solve that problem.
I mean, one of the hardest things we do, we are very opportunity rich. One of the hardest things we do is sift through which ones to focus on. But we've gotten better and better at that as a company.
All right, Will, go ahead. Is it not working?
Sure, so maybe make it straightforward. The technology that we acquired from Vescent is sort of in the advanced technology area. And our role at this point in time is to bring that from advanced technology to being productizable and bring that out to the marketplace. When we're talking here in the conversations, we're looking to intersect that in the 2020, 2021 timeframe, just as we see this sort of push out for autonomous driving and with the need to bring that scanning LiDAR system in with that. So that's the time frame I think you would see the real impact of that technology coming forward.
I think as well, given that ours is solid state, now you can talk to the competition better, Mark, but being solid state, our technology is immune from mechanical vibration, for example, compared to some of these rotating towers, so to speak. So that's the bet we're making, that our solid state system being a lot smaller, being a lot more cost effective and immune from some of the environmental noise, if you like, will make it very, very attractive. That's the bet we're making. But as Mark said, it's a little bit out yet.
Thank you.
Okay, Tori, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I had a follow-up question for Peter. Peter, your closest competitor really emphasizes manufacturing as you know, their main competitive advantage. Now, ADI does more and more outsourcing, and I think Analog in general does more and more outsourcing. I'm just thinking about process technology. You mentioned you actually do develop some process technology with your foundry partners. Yeah. Just, you know, hoping you could elaborate on that. You know, how much do you do? Because I think in the long run, I think investors worry about, you know, too much analog getting outsourced using foundry process technologies and there being less and less differentiation. So if you can elaborate on that, that'd be great. Thanks.
It was in, actually, the answer to a level of sophistication we have in the outsourcing strategy is embedded in one of those wheels in my slides, if you go back, look. So even though we engage with an external foundry as necessary, it's probably over 50% of our revenue is generated through external foundries. We have all sorts of models of how we work with external foundries, all the way from using whatever they offer, so that's standard technology access, to embellishing those processes in conjunction with them so that they're more effective for our applications, to developing proprietary processes in their structures that only we have access to. So it fits within the foundry category, but it's only available to us. And we use some of those technologies for some of these applications, these high-speed applications that were discussed by Greg this morning. So even though we run a foundry model, we get access to proprietary process technology through that model. And it is the best way and the most impactful and economic way for us to take advantage of some of those more fine line processes. So I think we've got, while there's a sophisticated wheel internally, there's also a very sophisticated wheel externally. And the simple notion that external means generic is not the model to think of. We put as much effort and as much attention into iterating what's available to us externally in conjunction with good foundry partners that we have that can actually be part of the product differentiation in the end as we put into circuit innovations.
So we've been actually, Tori, doing external fab procurement, foundry procurement for 25 years, 27 years, and, you know, maintaining the edge all through that period of time. Now, there's another side to the equation as well. More and more of what we're doing is going external, but we're actually building a lot of new internal capabilities as well, particularly on the sensor side of things. So that's where the material sets are unique. They're not easily fabricated on a foundry, so we build those things internally. So it's a, as Peter said, it's a huge mix of recipes and different models to build this complex analog technology. Yep.
Let's get to our last question here.
Yeah, it's John Pitzer again with Credit Suisse. A question for Greg. Greg, just going back to the Hittite IP and acquisition, at the time of the acquisition, the feedback we received from customers was very positive. Great technology company in Hittite, now marrying with a much larger distribution resource company of ADI. But just given the long product life cycles of Hittite, it was going to take time to be able to leverage that. I wonder if you could just give us an update as to where we are in that design cycle of, you know, Hittite being able to leverage just the broader footprint they received with ADI. And we expect to see an acceleration of Hittite revenue here over the next, call it, 4 to 6 quarters.
So I won't steal Ollie's thunder, who has a slide on a little bit of that, but I'll give you a little bit of color, and then Ollie can hit some of the numbers later. But I think a few things. First, Hittite, a little bit like Linear, we had a very broad portfolio. But unlike Linear, we didn't have that big a sales force. So there's been a big opportunity to put our products into the ADI channel. And where there's been a lot of leverage was at the big customers because of the strategic relationships that ADI had that we didn't really have as much at Hittite because we were just smaller. So I would say that we have seen channel leverage. Again, there's a design cycle there, but we're starting to see that, and Ollie will talk about that in detail. We got a lot of design leverage because, again, you know, Hittite was really good at the microwave and RF, but we couldn't go down to the digital part of the signal chain right through the data converters. We were trying, but ADI brought that. So in these vertical market segments, the things I talked about, you know, automotive radar, military phased array, communications, we've been able to bring those technologies together. So the first co-design products are coming out now, I would say, that we have as the co-design team. So we consider this to continue to accelerate over time. But we have the same two benefits that Steve talked about. There's kind of the channel synergy and then the product synergy. And given that we're in that three some years, that product synergy is just starting.
Yeah. So I'd say, John, to add a little more color to what Greg has said, the Hittite franchise today is between 20 and 25% bigger than it was when we acquired it. So that's a mixture of, you know, the momentum that was in the pipeline and the new things that ADI has been able to convert and get synergy on over the last, 3 years now. So I think that's probably a good approximation for what's happened.
All right. Thanks, John. Okay, folks, so let's move on to a break. And when we get back, we'll talk about our consumer strategy and the new financial model. So give us about 15 minutes. It's 11:07. Let's meet back around 11:20.